Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, the absolute horror of primary school children shot dead in their classrooms in a town in Texas. We'll bring you the latest on that very shortly. Also today, the British government is to introduce an Irish Language Act today. We'll talk to one campaigner. Solicitor Elaine Byrne is taking your questions on inheritance, wills and the complicated webs that families get themselves into. Text 51551 or email us todaycb@rte.ie. With your questions. We have a very special guest later when we welcome the laureate for Irish fiction, author Colm Tobin, to the studio. And we are well and truly in hay fever season. And Dr. Maura Finn will take us through all the do's and don'ts and helpful tips when it comes to seasonal allergies. Any questions, do get them in to us now. A reminder of the text number 51551. Email todaycb@rte.ie or on Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. Columbine High School, Colorado, 13 killed. Sandy Hook Elementary School, Connecticut, 26 killed. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, Florida, 17 killed. And now, Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, where 19 young children and two adults were shot dead yesterday, becoming the second deadliest school shooting on record. We shouldn't know the names of any of these schools, but we do, because mass shootings continue to cause terror across the United States despite years of campaigns seeking changes to gun laws. There have now been more mass shootings in the United States than days in 2022. Tuesday was the 144th day of the year. There have been at least 212 mass shootings in America this year, according to the Gun Violence Archive. I want to cross now to the United States and speak to Terry Sheridan, news director, WSHU Public Radio. Terry, thank you for joining us on the programme this morning. And we've been seeing the pictures here of parents and relatives waiting for information about their children at a community centre in the town of Uvalde. Will you just describe to us what you know of what's been happening in that town in the last number of hours?
Well, they're still, as far as we know, identifying the children and trying to, you know, match them with the parents and then breaking the news to the parents who have gathered at the community center. They've been taking DNA swabs of the parents just to confirm the identity of and their parentage of the children, which, you know, you can read what you want to read into that about the children.
It just is the most horrendous situation to imagine anyone being in. The gunman and the events leading up to this shooting, can you tell us a little more, Terry, about what's known?
Well, we do know that the gunman is 18 years old. His name is Salvador Ramos. He is a resident of Uvalde. He attended Uvalde High School. He also attended the grammar school or the elementary school when he was that age. We know that he was bullied as a child. His experience in the school was not pleasant. He had a lisp. He stuttered. And he was bullied. In high school, he was also known to self-harm. Friends tell various media that he would have cuts on his face when he would come to basketball games and the like. He turned 18 earlier this month, and shortly after that is when he bought the weapons.
And he bought two rifles on his 18th birthday.
Yep, absolutely. At least two rifles. We also think there was also a handgun involved.
The children we know now are the victims of this attack, just give us a sense of their ages, Terry.
They would be in the fourth grade, so they would approximately be 8 or 9 years old. It was the third to last day of school. It was supposed to wrap up this Friday. So they were fourth graders. Figure that's about 9 years old.
Okay. And Terry, I just want to play a clip for you and for our listeners, because the Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr, he refused to talk about basketball before his team's playoff loss to the Dallas Mavericks last night. He delivered a passionate speech condemning gun violence in the United States. Let's take a listen.
In the last 10 days, we've had elderly black people killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. We've had Asian churchgoers killed in Southern California, and now we have children murdered at school. When are we going to do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to the devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, I'm sorry, I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough. There's 50 senators right now who refuse to vote on H.R. 8, which is a background check rule that the House passed a couple of years ago. It's been sitting there for 2 years. And there's a reason they won't vote on it, to hold on to power. So I ask you, Mitch McConnell, I ask all of you senators who refuse to do anything about the violence and school shootings and supermarket shootings, I ask you, are you going to put your own desire for power ahead of the lives of our children and our elderly and our churchgoers? Because that's what it looks like.
Terry, does that reflect how many people feel today?
Oh, absolutely. I'll speak also from personal experience, because there's the feeling of profound sadness, and then there's the frustration, and then there's the anger over why does this happen? And we know why it happens. You know, as Steve Kerr said, as President Biden said, as Senator Chris Murphy on the Senate floor said yesterday, it's because of the gun lobby and the power that they hold over much of Congress. Senator Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, the Democratic Senate Majority Leader, is looking to force a vote on that bill in the next coming days. It's probably going to be defeated, but their goal is to get the Republican senators on record and to perhaps publicly shame them. But the frustration is, as he said, we were here 10 years ago with Sandy Hook. We were here several years ago with Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. We were less than two weeks ago, talking about the supermarket in Buffalo. So that's where the frustration and the anger comes from.
Mm-hmm. And Terry, of course, this becomes immediately political now. But we're hearing that the response to this, already some are saying you should arm teachers. That's been suggested before, putting armed guards into schools. And you wonder how parents who are sending their children to school every day can feel remotely comfortable with that. Some may do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or also harden the school. That's the other thing that you heard. The schools need to be hardened. The teachers need to be armed. The good guy with the gun theory, which we saw how well that worked 2 weeks ago in the Buffalo supermarket. That's the frustration. Or it's the other tangent. And yes, mental health is part of the issue, but it's not the whole issue. And if those who are suffering from mental health issues didn't have access to guns, you wouldn't have mass shootings.
I know the information is still coming through on what happened, but when we talk about arming teachers, we know that the shooter in this case, the authorities, the police were aware that he was heading to the school, weren't they? They tried to stop him and they couldn't.
They tried to stop him. There was some sort of, this is where we still don't know the full details, some sort of pursuit. They engaged with him at the school. This horrible situation lasted for approximately 40 to 45 minutes. But he was wearing body armor as well. So if a teacher, let's just go down that path for a moment, if a teacher just, say, had a handgun, there would be no fight. If he was armed with a rifle, a semi-automatic rifle, and was wearing body armor, the teacher with a handgun wouldn't stand a chance.
Do you get any sense now that civil society will use this incident to rise up against the gun lobby finally? And you've mentioned all of the times when it was expected that that would happen previously. Do you get a sense that this is any different?
I honestly don't know. I mean, from personal experience, I covered Newtown and it's in my listening area. And if that didn't change the nature of the conversation, you know, I hope this incident in Uvalde does. I don't know if it will. I do know that a couple of years ago, after the Florida shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, at least there was movement, and in certain ways that movement is still going on. Is it enough? I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Newtown, of course, people will also know as Sandy Hook. You covered that. So you will know exactly what's happening in that town today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, somebody I work with was a first responder, an EMT that day in Newtown. And I know that that is something that she carries with her every day. Yesterday, last night, we spoke to some of the parents of the children, or some of the parents of the teachers who were lost at Newtown. And for them, this opens up a raw wound. Because again, it just brings back all those memories, all those feelings. but it also brings back the anger and the frustration that it's almost 10 years and nothing has happened.
Terry, we really appreciate your time today. Terry Sheridan, News Director, WSHU Public Radio. I think everyone will remember this speech. This was the 14th of December 2012. And as Terry was saying, it's coming up now to the 10-year anniversary of the Sandy Hook shootings, and the then President Barack Obama addressed the nation.
As a country, we have been through this too many times. Whether it's an elementary school in Newton or a shopping mall in Oregon, or a temple in Wisconsin, or a movie theater in Aurora, or a street corner in Chicago, these neighborhoods are our neighborhoods, and these children are our children. And we're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this, regardless of the politics. This evening, Michelle and I will do what I know every parent in America will do, which is hug our children a little tighter. And we'll tell them that we love them. And we'll remind each other how deeply we love one another. But there are families in Connecticut who cannot do that tonight. And they need all of us right now.
And that was 10 years ago. I'm joined on the line by Marion McKeown, U.S. correspondent with the Business Post. Marion, thank you for joining us today. I mean, we've heard those phrases many times since then, haven't we? Hug our children a little tighter, meaningful action, regardless of the politics. That was supposed to be the watershed moment in good gun control. It wasn't. Will anything change now?
Good morning, Claire. You know, I hate to say it because it's such a tragedy, but I really find it hard to believe that anything is going to change in America. I really feel that if it didn't change after Sandy Hook, when you had 25, 26, 7-year-olds shot dead, and the shock and the horror of that. And then, of course, we had the Parkland school in Florida, and you had all those wonderfully articulate students, David Hogg and his classmates, who came out, who went to Washington, who spoke so eloquently about the need for gun control. And they were vilified in some cases. In fact, he was bullied by Marjorie Taylor Greene and mocked. You know, they, and, you know, just speaking about Sandy Hook, parents from Sandy Hook have committed suicide in the past 10 years. You know, we forget, we talk about the immediate day and the immediate horror, but the aftermath of this is so scarring for so many people. And, you know, just adding to the list, in the last 5 years in Texas alone, the First Baptist Church shooting in 2017, 26 people killed, the Santa Fe High School shooting in 2018, another 10 killed, the Walmart shooting in El Paso, the attack on Hispanic people, 23 people killed, and then just after that, the Midland Odessa shooting, another 10 or so people killed. So, and yet, you know, Texas is since 2016 has been progressively loosening its gun laws, culminating with the gun laws that were introduced last year, that just made it sort of that, basically, you know, there is open carry in Texas for handguns.
So you don't even need a permit to carry a handgun.
You don't need a permit. There's no license required anymore. There's no training anymore. There isn't even fingerprinting. Yes, there is a law that if you're a criminal and you get a gun, that's a criminal offense. But it's just you can buy guns privately and at gun shows with no background checks, no nothing. And you know, Greg Abbott last September made a big when he was signing off on these 7 different pieces of legislation, said, you know, Texas is going to be a sanctuary state for the Second Amendment, meaning that, you know, anyone, basically, when it comes to guns in Texas, he would provide the ultimate protection to allow gun owners to keep as many guns as they want, okay, and to buy as many guns as they want.
He's the governor, so he was delighted, yeah, with himself when these laws were passed last year, making gun control even more lax and lenient,
oh, yeah,
in his state. Let's see if he has responded to this. Oh, he's saying that it's a senseless crime.
Well, yeah, and the Attorney General, Ken Paxton, you know, came out, and this nonsense again where he said what we need now is more guns, not fewer guns. You know, the NRA is having its convention in Houston, Texas this weekend. It's going to be 4 acres. It's 14 acres, a massive convention center where they literally sell every kind of gun and gun accessory imaginable. And you've all these guys like Ollie North and Donald Trump Jr. strutting around and talking about how great guns are. Donald Trump is, in fact, a keynote speaker on Friday at the event. But as I say, I've been to three or four of these NRA conventions, and I was at a private NRA convention in last November in Charlotte, where Wayne LaPierre, there was no media allowed, was triumphant, and he was talking about, we now have the Supreme Court that we want. We've got the guys we need on the Supreme Court now. Basically, we can, you know, we own them. And you know, he's not wrong, because there is a case. I don't want to preempt the Supreme Court, but there's a case coming up now. It's a New York case where the Supreme Court will be ruling on whether or not people should be allowed to carry concealed weapons in public places. And in New York at the moment, you can't do that. You can only keep a gun in your home. And everybody in America is allowed to do that in case of intruders or burglars. But the guys who brought this action are saying, no, we want to be able to bring a gun to defend ourselves anywhere. Why should it stop with our home? Mm-hmm. And Judge Samuel Alito, who of course became very prominent recently because of the leaked abortion opinion, he said, yes, why can't you carry a gun on the subway at night if you're coming home from work? Why should this be stopped? What's the good reason? At the moment in New York, you have to show a compelling reason to carry a gun in a public place. For example, if you work as a security man or whatever. But if the Supreme Court overturns the current law, it means that anyone can carry guns on the subway in public places. And you can imagine the chaos of that and the additional damage it will cause.
I just want to come back to you, Val, because I know it's a place you've visited a number of times, and just
That's listening, right, to
Terry there saying that the parents are still outside that community centre and they're giving their DNA samples to the workers there. I mean, the horror of it, it's just unbearable to even think about it. But what is that town like? Can you tell us a bit about it, Marion?
You know, it's one of those, there are towns in America, and especially in Texas, where you think that you've seen them before, but you've probably seen them in a movie. It's one of those Western Texas hinterland towns. It's sort of a pretty little main street. It's about 85% Hispanic and about 10-12% white people. It's not a wealthy town. The average home is worth about $78,000-$80,000. The people tend to work in unskilled labour. I remember there was a big meat processing plant there. There's a lot of mining work, gas extraction, there's construction, that kind of work. As I said, a lot of unskilled labour. But, you know, it's a modest kind of, it's got an opera house, which I was really surprised by when I saw it, but it's one of those oldie worldy ones that was probably built in the 1800s. It was known before. It cropped up in novelists like Cormac McCarthy, who writes so eloquently about the West in Texas, frequently pepper in references to Uvalde. It used to be where the cowboys basically partied before they went on the Kansas cattle trail. So it's got a place in folklore and in history, but at the moment, it's a modest working town. It's not a wealthy town by any stretch of the imagination. It has a mayor, Dan Hutchinson, who I remember making very controversial comments in the past couple of years about undocumented migrants and blaming them for all kinds of things and, you know, saying they were the cause of all the trouble. But in the main, it's a family town. There's football there on Friday nights. It's, you know, it's a typical Southern, like Texan American town, and with a charm and a kind of a friendliness about it, I'd have to say as well.
All right, Marion, well, they're in for a very tough time from here on.
They certainly are.
Thanks so much for joining us. Marion McKeown, their US correspondent with the Business Post. We'll take a quick break.
Text 51551. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.